giver to what we're doing here. Send your gifts by faith to Save America Ministries, P.O. Box 70879, Richmond, Virginia, 23255. Don't wait for the other guy to do it. You get on board yourself. God bless you, and get a copy of the Christian Combat Manual. God bless you and be a blessing.
You've been listening to Viewpoint with Chuck Crismeyer. Viewpoint is supported by the faithful gifts of our listeners. Let me urge you to become a partner with Chuck as a voice to the church declaring vision for the nation. Join us again next time on Viewpoint as we confront the issues of America's heart and home.
The views expressed on this program are those of the host and guests and are not necessarily those of...
This is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Christian civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that'll determine what the future will bring. I need to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They're my views. And for this first half hour, it's going to be the views of Mr. Yuri Felsitsky. And, of course, he had written a book along with his co-author, Alexander Litvinenko. Litvinenko, of course, was poisoned by the KGB last November and had died last November. But the book is still here. It's called Blowing Up Russia, The Secret Plot to Bring Back the KGB Terror. And certainly Yuri Felsitsky is a historian, works here in the United States, really risking his life to put forward the truth about what's going on. We've had him as a guest on some of our other programs. Thank you very much for being with us again this evening. Now, this is a different audience, so please don't hesitate to repeat some of the things we talked about before. So I'm just going to let you tell our listeners how it was that you happened to team up with Alexander Litvinenko and write this book, which is so vitally important because it tells the world what really happened. Of course, we've heard about those bombings in Moscow where supposedly the wicked Chechnyans had committed this terrible terrorist attack, and I think 300 people there were killed in the explosions with the apartment houses. And, of course, what you reveal is this wasn't Chechnyan terrorist at all. This was an operation of the Russian Secret Service, the FSB, to justify going to war with Chechnya. So tell us the background of how you happened to team up with Alexander.
We met in 98 when Alexander Litvinenko went public with very damaging information for the KGB. Of course, Litvinenko was working for KGB for like 20 years. He was lieutenant colonel. In August of 91, and as probably you know, after the collapse of the Soviet Union, KGB renamed itself, and now it has the title FSB, Federal Security Service of the Russian Federation, but people are the same, strategy is the same, ideology is the same, everything is the same, just the name is different. And Litvinenko in November of 98 went public with the information that he received in order to kill Boris Berezovsky, who at that time was not only the richest man in Russia, he was also an influential politician and a person who held a high government position. And to receive an order to kill a government bureaucrat was definitely a violation of law, and Litvinenko decided not to kill Berezovsky and instead went public with this information. He was immediately kicked out from the FSB. And soon he was put in prison for 9 months. He was acquitted because the Russian court, which in 1999 was independent, at least partially independent, could not find him guilty, and he was released. But it was clear that a new arrest, or probably even a murder, is a matter of time. And during those very difficult months for Litvinenko, we were, you know, fairly close. I helped him a lot. And when I started to investigate the explosions of September of 1999 in Russia, I approached him and offered him to write this book together.
All right, fine. And Chris, you actually went to the head of the, I guess, the FSB or one of the other organizations to plead for Sidney Alexander's life, and he lets you know in no uncertain terms that unless, of course, they came up with a fabulous amount of money, that they were going to kill him.
Well, this was in May of 2000.
Hold that thought for just a moment. This is Dr. Stan. Our guest is Yuri Felsitsinsky, and basically, it's a fascinating book to read, The Blowing Up Russia. And you really get a feeling for what goes on there. You must have been rather ill at ease when you actually had this meeting with this general who, of course, you would know if there was going to be violence if he began to stutter. And during the course of your conversation with him, he began to stutter, which meant, of course, that probably Alexander's life was in danger, and so was yours.
Well, in May 2000, after the release of Litvinenko from prison, we decided that I should try to talk to one of the generals of the FSB, who indeed was superior of Litvinenko for many years, to understand whether the FSB would leave him alone, you know, since he already spent 9 months in prison, and this was a hard punishment for one single press conference. And the general was very honest with me, and he basically explained to me that there is no way they're going to pardon Litvinenko for the crime he committed, for the treason of the FSB, for the defection from the FSB. And at that point, we discussed, I remember, for the first time, we discussed with Litvinenko, you know, the possibility of his escape from Russia. Of course, I left Russia in 78, and, you know, my feelings were that, you know, he had nothing to lose and he had nothing to do in Russia. But in May 2000, we didn't come to an agreement about his immigration. When I approached him in September of 2000, after I started to investigate the explosions of 99, then he suddenly agreed to emigrate. And he left Russia in October of 2000. On 1st of November, he landed in London. Exactly 6 years later, on 1st of November 2006, he was poisoned by two FSB officers. Indeed, Scotland Yard just issued arrest warrants for three people, so it's very possible that three FSB officers, not two, were directly involved into poisoning Mr. Lugovoy, Mr. Kavtun, and Mr. Sekalenko.
And of course, they will never be brought to justice because they'll be protected by Vladimir Putin.
Of course, because the Russian government already stated that they're not going to extradite them, so I think the British government will demand extradition, of course, but those agents are not going to be extradited because the Russian government, as we know from
hold that thought right there. Well, this is Dr. Stan. I think it's important that our listeners understand that Russia is moving rapidly back to where it was, you know, in the days of Stalin. They're certainly killing people, reporters, anybody else, of course, who, you know, stands up and tells the truth. A number of people in high positions of government have been assassinated. Certainly our president has looked into Mr. Putin's eyes and says he's seen his soul and he can trust him, but this man is preparing himself to be a dictator, isn't he, Putin?
Well, I think Mr. Bush definitely made a mistake when he made that famous statement. I think he knows now, by now, that he made a mistake. And Vladimir Putin was in charge of the Russian secret police until August of 1999. exactly when explosion started. They started in September of 99.
Now, these were the explosions there where the FSB was blowing up apartment houses and then blaming it on the Chechens so they could justify going to war.
Well, four apartment buildings were blown up in September of 99, two of them in Moscow. 300 people were killed. At that time, this was the largest terrorist act ever happening in Russia. And on 22nd of September, a fifth apartment building was about to blow up when local police found explosive materials several hours before the explosion. Next day, on 23rd of September, they were even more lucky. They arrested two terrorists. This was announced as a major crackdown on terrorism in Russia. You know, everybody was happy. Even President Putin, you know, made a statement that this was a great, great victory for the law enforcement in their fight against terrorism. The problem was that the moment the local police arrested those two terrorists, they presented ID of the officers of the Russian Secret Service, KGB, the FSB. They were immediately taken by the central Moscow office, and we've never seen them anymore. That's when, on 23rd of September, 99, the Russian public, for the first time, realized that the Russian Secret Service, indeed, not Chechen separatists, were behind those bombings. And the government, in order to cover up what was going on, started the second Chechen war the same day, 23rd of September, 99. That's when Russian planes started to bomb Grozny, the capital of the Chechen Republic, and President Putin announced a war against Chechen Republic.
And of course, this then has been used to justify ever more government control over the lives of the Russian people. Would that be a fair statement?
Oh, yes. Indeed, President Putin, of course, was portrayed at that period as a person who is ready to fight against terrorism, who is tough, who has great background with security service, military men, etc., etc. And the moment Putin became the president, he started to take under control all civil liberties which Russia had. All major TV stations were confiscated or taken under control of the government. All major newspapers were taken by the government. For all practical purposes, Russia lost their freedoms. Putin, using his power as a president, started to promote to major political positions FSB officers and military generals. Now we have between 70% and 80% of all major political positions in Russia taken by those people. For the first time in history, not only in history of Russia, I think for the first time generally in history, the Secret Service is running the country. It's an absolutely new phenomenon. No one knows how to deal with it. These are very dangerous and very difficult people. They do not know how to build. They know how to ruin, how to kill, how to control, and how to suppress. And indeed, this organization, of course, the KGB, which is now has the title the FSB, was organized by Bolsheviks in 1917 in order to fight democracy both inside and outside Russia. And that's what they're doing, actually, since 1917. That's what they do now, because that's what they trained to do.
And, of course, I think one of the comments that you made is that many of the reporters in Russia were actually working for the FSB, and they were writing all sorts of news articles that were nothing more than lies. They were being paid, and they were betraying their profession by simply going along with the Russian Communist Party line.
Well, that's the old problem which we had in the Soviet Union. As probably, many people, many listeners could remember, when many journalists were working directly or indirectly for KGB, some others were simply afraid to write what they would like to write. The third portion would simply write for money what the government wants them to write. And those who are not willing to cooperate would be put in prison or even killed. And that's what's happening with people like Anna Politkovskaya, of course.
She was recently killed by the government.
Recently killed, and everybody understands that this is a political murder. committed by the government or people working for the government. She was killed for Vladimir Putin's birthday. She was killed on his birthday as a present to Vladimir Putin. No one, of course, was punished for this murder, as well as for murder of Alexander Litvinenko. And when we are thinking whether Putin gave the order to kill Litvinenko, well, we probably would never know whether he gave the order. But in any case, he is guilty, because if he gave the order to kill Litvinenko, then he is guilty of killing British citizen, because Litvinenko was a British citizen by that time. He received his citizenship in October. And if he didn't give a direct order to kill him, then we know that since no one was punished in Russia for this murder, not a single general lost his position or job, we understand that Putin is quite happy with this murder.
In other words, if Putin had been upset by what had happened, he would have fired some people in key positions.
Of course. That's the same what we were thinking and stating about the September 99 bombings, that if Putin was not involved directly into those bombings, if he was not the person who prepared that operation, then at least he had to fire Mr. Patrushev, who is in charge of secret police or Russian secret service since August of 99. And Patrushev actually is staying there, and he is in charge of the FSB up until now.
Well, because that was very interesting. I've always wondered why Yeltsin actually chose Putin as his successor. Of course, apparently Yeltsin had resigned before his second term was over. And he really, of course, I guess, was in no position to buck the Soviet secret police. He actually suggested that Putin be his successor, mainly by getting a guarantee for his safety and the safety of his family. Would that be a fair statement?
Well, first of all, we do know, of course, that Putin signed guarantees for Yeltsin and his family. And by the way, he was playing by the rule. Yeltsin and his family was not touched. Of course, Yeltsin, during those years when he was in power, you know, intentionally or unintentionally or questionably, maybe broke some laws, and he was afraid that the next president may be weak enough and would not be able to defend him and his family.
Now, had they stolen money, or what had they done?
Well, no, I do not want to say that Yeltsin was stealing money. I'm quite sure that Yeltsin personally never was stealing a single dollar. But you see, we are talking about a period of time when there were no laws. From 91 to up until now, indeed, there are no really new laws, and the old Soviet laws could not be applied for contemporary economic situation. This means that any businessman could be indeed charged by the government for breaking the law. That's what was happening every time when the government wants to punish somebody like Michael Khodorkovsky, for example, claiming that he was breaking a law, and it's very difficult to defend him because there are no laws indeed in Russia. This could be applied to everybody, including Yeltsin and Yeltsin family. And for this reason, secret service of Russian government secret services like FSB offered Yeltsin a plan that the next president should be from the secret service in order to be strong enough to defend Yeltsin and his family. So all candidates which were presented for the position of the next president were from the Russian Secret Service. Mr. Stepashin was in charge of the FSB at one point, Mr. Primakov was in charge of military intelligence, and Mr. Putin, of course, was in charge of the FSB as well. So all three candidates who had the chance to become the next president indeed were from the Russian Secret Service.
So the people really didn't have much of a choice. You had, which one of the members of the Secret Service, do you want to vote for?
We're going to
have a democratic election. You vote for the candidate of their choice. There's nobody to represent these ideas of democracy and freedom.
Well, you see, unfortunately, when you have Russia, of course, was a very young democracy in a period of 91 to 99, and it was very easy to manipulate public opinion through TV, through newspapers. And once again, the problem was that the real choice for the Russian population during the elections of 99 was between a candidate from the Russian Secret Service and the communist candidate. And since Russians would never vote for a communist candidate again, I mean, they're sick of communists so much that they would never vote for a representative of the Communist Party, the Secret Service men, unfortunately, would win, and that's what was going on.
But wasn't Putin a member of the Communist Party himself?
Well, he was. At one point, you know, almost everybody who was active in political life, except of people like Sakharov or Solzhenitsyn, were members of Communist Party. Putin was a member of the Communist Party as well. But they were fighting for a new situation when the Communist Party will not be in control of the Russian Secret Service. Indeed, they were reversing the situation. In the Soviet years, the Communist Party would control the Russian Secret Service. Now the Russian Secret Service controls everybody, including the Communist Party.
And so they've come full circle, ladies and gentlemen. They're back in power. Well, our guest is Yuri Veljicinski. And, Chris, one of the things that really I learned from your book was that when Alexander, of course, defected from Russia...
Gold and silver is tremendously undervalued. Global demand vastly exceeds mine supply by more than 60% annually. There is little in the financial world more certain than a coming explosion in the prices of gold and silver. The U.S. dollar continues to lose value and respect as the world's reserve currency. Our nation faces challenges on many fronts, and a day doesn't pass without another economist bringing forth warnings of impending economic calamity. There has never been a better time than right now to acquire physical gold and silver. Discount Gold and Silver Trading was founded on the principles of truth and honesty. We believe in providing a quality product, quality service, and most importantly, competitive pricing. We provide all forms of precious metals, including American gold, silver, platinum, and rare investment and circulated coins. Silver bars, rounds, and 90% silver bags are on hand for the silver investor. Gold self-directed IRAs are available. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. Toll free, that's 1-800-375-4188.
Most Americans are iodine deficient today because they stopped adding iodine to our milk and to our flour, and only about half of the salt that's consumed in the United States today contains iodine. So Radio Liberty has produced a four-tape or a four-CD set that discusses the health benefits of iodine. We also offer Iodorol. It contains 12.5 milligrams of iodine per tablet. And we also offer potassium iodide tablets that'll protect your thyroid gland in case there's a nuclear attack. So if you'd like to order these products or obtain additional information, why don't you call 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927, or go to our website at RadioLiberty.com. That's RadioLiberty.com. Once again, our telephone number, 1-800-544-8927.
You got headaches? Most headaches are caused by a structural weakness of blood vessels in the head, and the blood vessels are tending to balloon, causing a headache. The structural weakness is due to a deficiency. Correct the deficiency and the body will heal itself. I blended what I believed to be the missing nutrients in the right proportions, and the headaches went away. When they were gone, they stayed gone. I named it Headache Stay Gone. See HeadacheStayGone.com or call 800-327-0727 for more information or to place an order. I'll send you a bottle of Headache Stay Gone. Headache Stay Gone will cure your headaches and prevent them from coming back before you pay the bill. Headache Stay Gone has already cured the worst migraines I have ever heard of. Call 800-327-0727. All orders are shipped the same day. Call 800-327-0727. That's 800-327-0727.
Hi, this is Dr. Tony Teary. Are you one of the many people who take vitamin supplements? Do you take handfuls of pills each day to increase energy, reduce your pain, or improve your overall health? Now there is a better way to get the vitamins and minerals your body needs in a delicious-tasting whole food liquid supplement, Body Balance. Body Balance contains 121 essential vitamins and minerals and is made from only organic and natural sources. Developed by doctors, Body Balance was originally available only through healthcare professionals. Now this incredible whole food liquid supplement can be delivered directly to your home. Body Balance offers an extremely effective method to feed your body towards wellness, and we're confident you'll love the difference your body feels. To order your Body Balance, call me directly at 1-800-768-9763 and try it risk-free for 45 days. Again, that's 1-800-768-9763 or online at healthyfoundations.net.
That Russia is not a friend of the United States. And what he wants, of course, is very disturbing, is Russia today is the largest oil exporter in the world, the largest natural gas exporter in the world. American corporations and banks finance certainly the pipeline that allows Russia to actually ship their natural gas to Western Europe, and has made Western Europe totally dependent, or almost totally dependent, or largely dependent upon Russian natural gas. We've done so many unexplainable things to help the Soviet Union. I'm speaking now of the Americans. Have you ever wondered why we've done so much to help build up the Soviet Union?
Well, unfortunately, again, we know that this was happening since 1918, when the Soviet Union or Soviet Russia appeared on the map. The Western world always helped the Russian government, the Soviet government. The capitalism always helped socialist government to become strong, and actually, you know, by doing this, they were helping, of course, the Soviet government to ruin the European countries. Maybe we are dealing with greed, maybe we are talking about situation, unfortunately, when capitalism indeed has no ideology except, you know, selling and buying goods, and that's exactly what those people are doing. But we do know that in 1920s, in 1930s, American companies and German companies were helping the Soviet Union to build a military and industrial machine which later was used against European countries. So this is unfortunately a history of tragic events. It's happening now because of this high prices for oil and gas. European countries now are sitting quietly, not allowing themselves to criticize President Putin and to criticize the regime which is establishing in Russia now. And I think, of course, it's wrong. I think it's going to backfire. I think these mistakes are going to be very expensive in the short run. At the same time, I think as a historian, I'm trying, of course, to be an optimist. And since we do know that in August of 1991 the Soviet Union collapsed, although we didn't expect it, and we never thought, of course, we never thought that the Soviet Union is going to collapse so quickly, in several days actually, that this gives us an example, you know, and a reason to be optimistic. I believe in Russia. I believe in Russian people. I do not think that the regime which is established by Putin now will hold longer than 10 years. I think this is quite impossible. I think in 10 to 20 year period, we are going to see the second collapse of the empire of the Russian Federation. Because this, what Putin is doing, he's making the same mistake what the Soviet government done. They're creating a centralist empire when everything is depend on Moscow and is dictated by Moscow. This is wrong. This is not going to exist. The Russian Federation will collapse again.
Well, I certainly anticipate it. Well, I mean, this centralized planning just doesn't work. I mean, you need to harness the imagination of the people, not of the bureaucrats who have a vested interest and are primarily interested in greed and power.
So, well, we also are talking, of course, about country which is extremely corrupt, and we are dealing now with centralized economic corruption, because not only the government and the country is corrupt, but all those corrupted money are concentrated in Moscow. Like 80% of those of all money of a huge country are concentrated in Moscow. So when tourists go to Moscow, they see a beautiful city, very rich, you know, sunny, lively. When they step out literally an hour or two outside Moscow, we are entering like 19th century Russia, not even 20th century.
And if we were talking about the 1800s, in other words, the cities are developed, the countryside is certainly backward. Well, really, I appreciate so much you being on with us. I understand you only wanted to stay for 30 minutes. It's late back there, so I'll let you go. But thank you so very much for being with us again. And
thank you very much for the invitation.
And certainly the book, Blowing Up Russia, we recommend it, but we're going to be carrying this book. We think it's so vitally important that our listeners read what Yuri and Alexander have written. It's a lesson for every American should know. Good night, and God bless you.
Thank you very much.
Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, and Chris, we're going to have open lines the last 30 minutes. If you're out there in the listening audience would like to give us a call, our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. And, of course, there were a number of very, very important points that we find from the book. One is the fact, of course, Yuri admits that the United States has been funding American corporations, American capitalists, funding Russia since its inception. I hope you picked that up. And those of you who have read my March newsletter, which, of course, will be going out very, very soon, will find out that we have funded not only Russia since its inception, we funded them all during the Vietnam War, when the Russians were funding the North Vietnamese, who were killing funding the Viet Cong, who were killing our boys in South Vietnam. And it was all a charade. We never tried to win the war in Vietnam. We sent our boys over there to fight and bleed and suffer and die, but we never allowed them to win. We could have won the war at any time. In fact, the North Vietnamese could not have maintained their opposition to the United States had the United States and our Western European allies not been funding the Soviet Union that was funding the North Vietnamese. Does anybody in their right mind honestly believe that the North Vietnamese were building sophisticated MiG aircraft? That the North Vietnamese were building sophisticated anti-aircraft batteries, radar-guided anti-aircraft batteries? They were manufacturing weapons of warfare, the sophisticated weapons of warfare that were used there in the Vietnam War. Has anybody stopped and thought about how could it possibly be the United States, the most powerful nation in the world, would be fight a 10-year war against a little tiny country the size of the state of Mississippi, and we would have lost the war? And, of course, it was all Falderal. I mean, the war was simply a massive diversion. And as our boys were sent to Southeast Asia to fight communism, why, of course, we were losing our freedom here at home. And as we dealt with weeping widows and weeping mothers who saw the flag-draped coffins come home, step by step, why measures were being taken in the United States to bring in the Great Society, to bring in socialism, to transform America, and that is exactly what is going on today. Iraq and the Middle East are a great diversion to keep us from realizing we're losing our freedom here in America today. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and we're going to have open lines the last 30 minutes, and certainly, if you're out there in the listening audience, our number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. I had to agree to have Yuri on for just 30 minutes tonight, but it's late. He's back east. He's doing a lot of interviews, and of course, his message is very important. Because basically what he points out in the book is the fact that the, you remember, of course, when they were blowing up all those apartment houses in Moscow, and they killed 300 Russians when they blew up the apartment houses, several apartment houses in Russia, and it was all blamed on the Chechnyan rebels, and it wasn't the Chechnyan rebels at all. It was the Russians' own secret service. They were killing Russians so they could create an incident so they could justify going to war with Chechnya. Why did they want to go to war with Chechnya? Because, of course, wars are the vehicle by which the tyrant rallies the people behind him. It certainly was Plato who wrote, you know, when the tyrant has defeated the enemy by conquest or treaty and there's nothing to fear from him, that he's always out there rounding up another enemy so he can rally the people behind him. Ladies and gentlemen, that's exactly what's being done today. We've created an enemy. It's called Islamic terrorism. We're fighting Islamic terrorism, and that's why we've got to give up our freedom here in America. But if the war on terrorism was real, and our leaders were really concerned about it, and they were really concerned, so concerned that when we go to the airport, we've got to go through the long lines and take off our shoes and take off our belt and take off our coats and take our wallets out of our pockets and of course, you know, take our watches off and pens out of our pockets and then go through the metal detector. And I always set off the metal detector because I got too bad hips and I have to be searched every time. But if this is really a problem, why wouldn't they think that they might want to have criminal profiling and try to get people from the Middle East? They're probably the most likely Islamic terrorists, wouldn't you think? Rather than treating everybody as a criminal. And if there really was a war on terrorism, the first thing they would have done was to have sealed our southern border, because many, many people coming across that border are actually from Islamic countries. Coming into the United States, the Islamic terrorist countries, and certainly you would think that they would not, you know, catch these people from terrorist countries and then immediately turn them loose in the catch and release program. I mean, you would deport these people, but we don't deport them. We catch them and then we release them and tell them to come back in 90 days for a hearing, and you'd never guess what happens. Most of the people never come back for their hearing. Oh, shucks, well, we're just so incompetent, you know. But we're getting smarter, and we want you to know you're safer than you were on 911. At least that's what they keep telling us. And I guess, as we've said so many times before, if there really was a war on terrorism, and they were really worried about, of course, the Islamic terrorists coming over here, why haven't we had at least one major terrorist attack in the United States of an Islamic nature since September 11th, or at least a few of them? Couldn't you mean to tell me they couldn't find at least one or two Islamic terrorists to put on a suicide bomb and walk into a major store and blow himself up like they do in Israel, or like they're doing over in Iraq today? I mean, is Osama bin Laden got some sort of a special deal worked out with the United States government that he's not going to attack us again, at least not until he gets permission from our leaders? Or maybe this whole thing is a fraud to justify ever more government control over our lives. Our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. But let me give you an example. If there was really a war on terrorism, the Bush administration would do everything they could so that there was every single pilot was armed to protect the people on our airplanes, and yet they've done everything they could to block and discourage the pilots from having weapons and rules such that they can't have their gun in the cockpit where they can reach it when the door is unlocked. If the door is unlocked, they've got to lock up their gun before they can unlock the door. That's the time that you need it. That's the time when the wicked terrorists are going to get in, when the door is open. Oh, no, you've got to lock up your gun when you open the door to go out to go to the bathroom, or when somebody's going to bring a cup of coffee into you. That doesn't make any sense. And there was really a war on terrorism. Every plane that was flying would have air marshals on it, and their air marshals are on less than 10% of our planes. I can't tell you what percentage there are, because that's a top secret that we can't let Osama bin Laden know that most of our planes do not have, you know, air marshals on them. Very, very few of them ever really have two air marshals on them. It's all for show. It's like when you go to the airport and you have to go through those long lines. that created the perception in your mind that the war on terrorism is real. But this is not a war on terrorism, it's a war on freedom. And then, of course, as we've said before, if there was really a threat of terrorism, and, you know, they would not be telling you to, you can't just bring any fluids on the plane. They would be actually checking the cargo that goes in, and all of the cargo that was on board the plane, and most of the cargo that goes on board the plane, is not checked. Yes, I think this last weekend I was at the Ontario airport, and they did actually send at least the luggage that we put on the plane through some sort of an X-ray machine, but they don't open it up and go through it. And there's all sorts of ways that you could conceal a bomb, in the cargo that goes on the plane. Oh, they make a big issue of going through what you kind of carry on, but what about the cargo? And not only the passengers' cargo, but the other cargo that these planes carry. But you see, this is all a fraud. And if you don't believe that, I would suggest you get the September issue of Foreign Affairs magazine. Now, for those of you who do not read Foreign Affairs, and you should really read it, or at least skim it as I do, as it comes every other month or so, Foreign Affairs is the official publication of the Council on Foreign Relations, which is America's invisible government, which is the major coordinating organization that controls both political parties. Is an outgrowth of a secret society that was created by Cecil Rhodes in 1891. And, of course, this is all covered in my book, Brotherhood of Darkness, and the source of reference would be the writings of Professor Carol Quigley, certainly one of the most eminent of all historians during the last century, during the 20th century. In fact, Samuel Huntington, I was reading something by Samuel Huntington, his professor of history at Harvard University, talking about the brilliance of Carol Quigley. And Carol Quigley was brilliant. In fact, I spent many weeks going through his papers back at Georgetown University about 1980, and had an opportunity then to really get to almost know how he was thinking, get to know a great deal about him, having talked to both his wife and his mistress and his friends. And, certainly he was a brilliant man. But, of course, he missed the major conspiracy. He knew about the secret society that Cecil Rhodes had created. He knew, of course, that the secret society being created in 1891. And the purpose of the secret society was to bring the kingdom of God to earth. By man. Man was going to bring the kingdom of God to earth, replacing God. And, of course, Secret society had controlled both political parties and had for many years, controls the finances, the corporations, and a small group of very, very wealthy and powerful people run our country and make mockery out of this so-called democratic process. Well, we've got Jeannie calling here, and if you're out there in the listening audience, give us a call at 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. And but I think it's so vitally important that you understand, and of course, if you want the documentation on this, it's covered in my book, Brotherhood of Darkness, or in the writings of Professor Anthony Sutton, and this is what's covered in my March newsletter. The United States has funded the Soviet Union since its inception, and is still funding the Soviet Union. Why? Because you need an enemy. And then, of course, you read the book, The Devil's Game, which we carry. The United States has been funding this Islamic terrorist movement. It originally was funded by MI6, British intelligence, and then after the Second World War, when the CIA was created, the CIA has been funding the Islamic terrorist movement. Think back 10 years. Think back 10 years. Did you ever hear of the Islamic terrorist movement at that time? Why was there no threat from Islamic terrorism and the philosophies of jihad and the teaching of Muhammad 10 years ago, but there's such a great threat now that we've got to go over there and kill a lot of Muslims and go to war with the Muslim world so that they don't come over here and get us? Ladies and gentlemen, they're not interested in coming and getting us. If they were, we'd have unrest in our cities right today. If we do have it, it'll be because it was planned that way. If you read my newsletters, you'll find that this going through the long lines of the airports was planned by Mr. Richard Haass, who today is the director of the Council on Foreign Relations. This was all planned back in 1996, 5 years before before the 911 attack to really understand what's going on. Let me suggest you go to my website of RadioLiberty.com and read my August, September, October, November, and December Radio Liberty letters, and you'll find the writings of course there of Condoleezza Rice, where she tells you why Bush was asked by the 911 commission, why didn't you do something to try to head off the attack? And she said very plainly, well, we didn't try to head it off because there had to be a major issue, there had to be a major crisis before the American people would change their thinking, before they'd be willing, of course, to give up their freedom and allow more surveillance. And basically, this is what Richard Haass has said, and of course, Donald Rumsfeld admitted, that the plan to deal with the Islamic terrorists and was completed the day before the 911 attack. It's all there, the documentation. A lot of this comes from the book written by Lee Hamilton and Governor Thomas Keene, co-chairman of the 911 Commission, and in their book, Without Precedent. You've got to understand, it's a gigantic put-on. Our boy, why haven't we been able to win the war in Iraq and Afghanistan? Because they were never sent there to win the war in Iraq and Afghanistan, any more than they were sent to Vietnam to win the war, any more than they were sent to Korea to win the war. They were just sent over there to fight and bleed and suffer and die. And if you don't believe that, let me just give you one example. In 1991, we sent 695,000 troops to the Middle East to shoo the Iraqi forces, Saddam's forces, out of Kuwait, that's all. But 695,000 men were there. And yet, of course, when we invaded in 2003, why they were given 140,000 to 150,000 troops, why would anybody in their right mind think that it took 695,000 troops in 1991 to shoot Saddam's forces out of Kuwait, but that we could conquer and hold and occupy and control Iraq, knowing full well there was going to be sectarian violence there, with less than a quarter of the troops we used in 1991, we've never given our military the manpower or the ability to win the war. They could have won the war if they'd had the manpower initially and they'd done the right things they were not allowed to then. They're not being allowed to now. And if you think another 20,000 men are going to solve the problem, you don't understand. This is all a prelude, I fear, to an expansion of the war in the Middle East. And may God forgive us. Well, let's go to Jeannie, who's calling. Hi, Jeannie. How are you doing?
Well, I'm doing pretty good. How are you, Doc?
I'm doing fine. It's good to hear from you. Have a question or comment?
Well, I just have a comment. I was just listening to Yuri, and that was a real gem to have him on for 30 minutes.
Oh, we have another hour interview with him if we have him for with an hour, and you can that'll probably be a tape of the month for this month.
Oh yes, it's so important. But I wanted to thank you for all your programs because everything ties in. You have the pieces of the puzzle, and a lot of people are saying, hey, now I have the whole picture. So thanks, Dr. Stan, for being there day after day and hour after hour.
Well, God bless you, Jeannie. It's good to hear from you. Give my best to Jim.
I shall.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
All right, let's go to Ian, who's calling from Phoenix, Arizona. Hi, Ian. How are you doing?
Pretty good, Dr. Stan. How are you?
I'm doing fine. Do you have a question or comments?
Yes, I have a question about 9/11, actually.
All right, fine.
Considering that these terrorists, quote-unquote, obviously couldn't contact any kind of air traffic control on the ground as they were hijacked.
Right.
I'm sorry, I had a call coming in, so you might hear me click in and out
again.
All right,
fine, go ahead.
Well, I was wondering if you could offer any insight as to whether it would even be possible for them to fly these planes hundreds of miles from point A to point B, point A being, of course, the area over the U.S. that they were hijacked, and point B being the World Trade Center, let alone accomplish this on two occasions within, 15 or 20 minutes
right
between each plane hitting the towers?
Right. No, it is not feasible, not only that, but it's not feasible that our air traffic control system, which immediately launched fighter planes, if any plane was suggested being hijacked, that was inoperable that morning.
Well, the war games are what paralyzed the NORAD response. I mean, I know a lot about 9/11. This is just something that just basically occurred to me the other day.
And, of course, the turn that was made by the plane as it comes in to hit the South Tower, the acrobatics by the plane that looped plate looped the loop around the Pentagon to come in to hit it. In the one area that was under construction where there were very, very few people there, instead of flying straight in where they would have hit Donald Rumsfeld's office, you know, obviously this whole thing was contrived, and we haven't got the full story yet, but one only has to really look at, of course, Building 7 come down, and if our listeners can do that, go up on the Internet, Google in, Building 7 videos and watch Building 7 come down, and as you see the center part of the building collapse first, that's how you do it with a controlled demolition. The roof starts to buckle in the middle, and you do that to take out the central support so the building will collapse in rather than outward, and then the base of the building goes. And there's a video that's actually been released today. It's actually where John Kerry is asked about this, and he said, oh yeah, well, it was a controlled demolition. They thought they might as well just get the building down. I wonder if John Kerry realizes what he said in this video that just came out today.
Yeah, most people don't know also that there was a lot of molten metal that collected in the basement of Tower 7. It wasn't just in the basement of the Twin Towers.
Right. I have no question at all.
I think that was, I think it was even visible from space on infrared until like mid-November or something like that.
Well, the thing is that it is so difficult, Ian, for the average American to believe that anything, that our own people would actually kill American soldiers, and yet one reason I wanted you to hear this interview with Yuri Veselsky is the fact that the Russians, a KGB, killed 300 Russian citizens in contrived, explosions in apartment buildings, so they could justify raise public support for attacking Chechnya. Well, of course, they were a little bit more sophisticated. They killed 3,000 Americans to justify getting us involved in a war, first of all with Afghanistan, and then with Iran, and I fear the next war, of course, is going to be, probably with Iraq, and the next one will be a war with Iran. Anything else you'd like to say?
Well, I had another question.
All right, well, hang on there for just a minute then.
Okay.
And we'll be back in just a minute to wrap up tonight's program here at Radio Liberty. Okay, Ian, what was your other question?
It was about yoga. My father is really into yoga, and I've been trying to sort of figure out how I would present this to him, because obviously I know it's sort of spiritually dangerous.
It is.
And I just don't see him believing anything that I could possibly say about it, because he'll just say it's nothing but stretching. So I was just sort of wondering how I might sort of articulate to him that it is not what it seems.
Well, of course, there's nothing wrong with stretching exercises, but it is the frame of your mind when you're in doing the yoga. And as you're actually putting your mind in sort of a neutral position, and you're sort of contacting, knowingly or unknowingly, you put yourself in a position where you can be taken over by the demonic spirits. I don't know how you will convince them. You could certainly show them, Carol Matrice Anna's excellent new DVD. Or if you could get him perhaps to watch my two DVDs, Brotherhood of Darkness, which doesn't deal with yoga or even state of mind, but it leads into the second DVD called Forbidden Secret, which does tell the secret. And, of course, what this really is all about is attacking people's minds to get them to put their mind into a position where they will open themselves up to demonic possession. And this is really what yoga is all about. Certainly there's nothing wrong with stretching, but
well, that's the only way that he'll see it, though.
The psychological part of yoga that allows you to open yourself up for the demons to come in. But most people don't even believe in demons. They don't realize that the battle, really is carried out in our minds. And once we take our mind off of God and God's commandments and open it up, then, of course, the other forces tend to come in. And here's where we really get into trouble. The battle is in our minds, and we have to be constantly guarding the thoughts that are there.
So is there any way to separate the two? Because that's what he's not going to see.
Well, you're gonna have to deal with that. You're going to have to convince him, what are his thoughts when he's doing all of this? What is he thinking about? What is he concentrating on? Is he focusing on the Lord Jesus Christ and his commandments? And is he focusing on fear of the Lord and obeying the Lord and loving the Lord? And if he's not, then, of course, what are the thoughts that are in his mind? because that's where the battle is being carried out for each and every one of us. I hope that helps you, Ian. I don't have all the answers, but that's the best answer I can give to you.
Okay.
And just talking to him about, is he a Christian?
Yes.
All right, fine. He better understand, of course, that there is no such thing as Christian yoga. Yoga is part of Hinduism, and I'd suggest Carol Matrice had an excellent video on that subject, okay?
Okay.
Good night, and God bless.
Thank you.
Well, this is Dr. Stan, and this is the time when I need to remind our listeners that Radio Liberty is primarily listener-supported. We're dependent upon those of you who listen to our program to help us. And if you'd like to help, our number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. And I'm afraid we have Mike calling in, but it's a little late. We're not going to be able to get to another caller. I would like to just point out that I hope many of you out there are beginning to consider making your plans just in case. Just in case, of course, our worst nightmare should come to pass, and that associated with the coming war with Iran, everything looks like we're going to war with Iran. It appears that the government is pretending that they certainly don't want to go to war with Iran, but the truth of the matter is the leaders of Iran want to go to war with America. The leaders of America want to go to war with Iran because they have a different agenda. And that's why you need to read my February 2007 newsletter. It's posted at RadioLiberty.com. Go there, read it, learn about the cosmic script that is being played out today. And then, of course, if you don't have access to the Internet, give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927. We'll be glad to send you a free copy of that newsletter and one of our catalogs. Of course, we do hope, if you're interested in beginning perhaps to put aside some emergency food supplies and medicines, you give us a call and we'll be glad to provide you information. We do hope that many of you will want to get my latest DVD, Forbidden Secret, because I think it has a very important message that will help you to better understand what indeed is taking place in America, indeed throughout the world today. And we'll explain to you what the secret was that has been passed down through the mystery religions and, of course, the sages and through the priests and through the theosophists and through the Knights Templar and the Rosicrucians and, of course, what is represented at Rosslyn Chapel over there in Scotland and in the higher rites of Masonry. You'll actually begin, of course, to get an idea of how this all fits together and what we must do if we hope to oppose it effectively. And that's a Forbidden Secret. If you'd like to know more about that, give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. And then, of course, we do hope that many of you will listen to our programs. You can hear them on the Internet at RadioLiberty.com. They're there live or archived 3 hours a day. You can also, of course, listen to our programs at AmericanNewsNet.com every morning. That's at 7 o'clock Pacific Time. GCN Live at 3 o'clock every afternoon. And then, of course, my 4 o'clock program at Radio Liberty, and then our 8 to 10 program on Radio Liberty. So please, of course, tell others about the programs. Urge them to listen. Understand, we are involved in a spiritual battle being played out on a political, ideological, cultural, economic, financial, educational battlefield. And most people don't even know the battle is going on. But, of course, the battle's been going on for a long time, and we're losing the battle because we have no leadership. The conservative movement has been compromised. The Christian movement has been compromised. The churches have changed, both their music and the message of the church, and most ministers are not willing, of course, to discuss controversial issues, of course, unless they're on the other side. And maybe they're telling us, oh, global warming is real, and we've all got to get involved in the environmental movement. But that is, of course, not the true message of the church. The church, of course, is to teach love of the Lord and fear of the Lord, and, of course, if we do not understand that our job is to obey the Lord and keep His commandments, to fear the Lord and keep His commandments. And if you're out there in the listening audience and don't have a personal relationship with our Lord Jesus Christ, I suggest you give it serious thought, because His message is true. I am the way and the truth and the life, and no man cometh unto the Father but through me. And we'll be back in just a moment for the next hour here at Radio Liberty. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay. Our guest this evening is going to be Gabriel Day and Rodney Lewis, who are the 911 Share the Truth Committee, and they're, of course, interested in trying to get people to examine what really happened on 911. And if you are out one of those people out there who say, well, obviously we know what happened at 911. I mean, I'm not going to believe a conspiracy theory. Well, let me suggest that most people believe a conspiracy theory. The only question is, which conspiracy theory do you believe? Do you believe that Osama bin Laden conspired and put together a team of 19 hijackers and sent them to the United States, and they were here and nobody knew they were here, and of course they were able to fly the planes, and with box cutters they were able to get onto our planes on just the very morning when they were having military exercises that simulated a plane crashing into a government building, and that actually, of course, our military had been practicing planes crashing into the Pentagon and the World Trade Center for a long period of time, but Condoleezza Rice and Dick Cheney and the President, nobody knew that this was the basic plan. We even have a publication put out several months before the 911 attack by Bill Gertz, a reporter from the Washington Times, who has access to all sorts of information. And Bill Gertz, actually, there talks about Operation Bajinka, which included, of course, hijacking American planes and crashing them into the World Trade Center and into the Pentagon. And if any of you would like to see, we could send you copies of the Bill Gertz backgrounder, published in June or July. So he was getting his information from the CIA or from leaks from government. But if you really believe, of course, that the official government story, it is a conspiracy theory. And of course, then, if you believe that conspiracy theory, I want you to explain to me the magic passports and how they were able to get out of the pockets of the hijackers. And one, of course, was then found at the site of the Twin Towers, and the other was found in Pennsylvania. How did those passports get out? Magic passports that survived the flaming wreckage, and of course, identified two of the attackers. And then, of course, Building 7 coming down the way it did at 5 o'clock there, the 5:20 the following afternoon. Just if you look at the videos, what really convinced me that this was controlled demolition was watching Building 7 come down several times. And you watch that building come down, you have to realize, of course, and I mentioned this in the last hour, but when you're going to take a building down with a controlled demolition, you have to destroy the central support. And you're supposed to destroy the central support so the center of the roof begins to cave inward. And that way the building will fall inward rather than outward. Otherwise, as you take down the base of the building falls outward, and of course it's spread all over everything close by. But that's not what happened. The center of the building collapsed, and then the base of the building collapsed. Obviously, there were explosives. It was a controlled demolition, and I really do not believe that anybody honestly believes the conspiracy theory that says Osama bin Laden had explosive planted in the basement of the building that housed the CIA and the FBI there in New York City. Well, with that as a background, Gabriel Day and Rodney Lewis, are you there listening? Are there... Who is it, Gabriel or Rodney?
That was Gabriel, and Rodney's with us also.
All right, fine, Gabriel. Well, let's get your remarks about what happened on 9/11 and why you don't believe the government conspiracy theory.
Well, we don't know the truth of what happened on 9/11, and that's what we're aggressively pursuing. The official story does not make any sense. It's just filled with inaccuracies. There's obviously been a cover-up, too, the way that they handled it directly after September 11th.
All right, fine. And so, I'm going to let you talk about what they did after 9/11 that convinces you that there is a cover-up. Well, I guess it's Gabriel Day, and Gabriel feels that there was a cover-up. Now, what happened after 9/11 that convinces you that they're not telling us the truth?
Well, it took 411 days for them to even form the commission, the Keene-Hamilton Commission, where after similar tragedies, Pearl Harbor, the Kennedy assassination, the shuttle disaster, all within a week they occurred. Nearly all the commission members had conflicts of interest, especially the executive director, Philip Zelikow, who was Condoleezza Rice's buddy and wrote a book with her. And over 80% of the family members' questions are still left unanswered. And the official commission report also specifically omitted such things as the war games, how the towers fell, and the mysterious collapse of Building 7 at 5:20 in the afternoon.
All right, fine. Well, of course, many people will say, but there really was an earlier evaluation. There was the Joint Intelligence Committee that held its first meetings in September 18th of the year 2002. So that was less than a year after the 9/11 Commission, probably the 9/11 attack. But there was an investigation, and that Joint Intelligence Committee did come up with a report on what had happened. So what are your thoughts about that initial evaluation? And that was the one, of course, that was headed by Peter Goss and, of course, by Senator Bennett.
Right. Well, Rodney, can you speak to that? Because I'm not familiar to what extent they investigated in that earlier one.
Right. Say that again, Porter Goss?
Porter Goss, right. Right.
Yeah, I'm not totally clear on that one either. I got involved when the...
when the 9/11 Commission...
Yeah.
Well, basically, of course, the other one was a cover-up. Both Porter Goss and Robert Benner were members of the Council on Foreign Relations.
Sure.
Porter Goss, of course, a lifetime member of the Central Intelligence Agency. In fact, he had been, sent from the Central Intelligence Agency to run for Congress. And, of course, what job did they give him in Congress? Why, he was to be in charge of oversight of the CIA. Here's a CIA agent, congressman, of course, who's in charge of oversight of the CIA, and then, of course, he heads this commission, and then he's rewarded for his fine job by becoming director of the Central Intelligence Agency, Porter Goss, right? And so, basically, of course, on the very morning of the 9/11 attack, he and Robert Bennett were having a breakfast with General Mahmoud Ahmad, who'd wired money to Muhammad Atta just about a month before that. But we'll be back here in just a moment with Gabriel Day and Rodney Lewis. Well, this is Dr. Stan. I was just pointing out that the initial report of the Select Intelligence Committee, headed by Porter Goss and Senator Robert Bennett, certainly was not an objective appraisal at all, although it did have some fascinating information in it. Among it was the fact that in April of 2000, that's about a year and a half not quite a year and a half before the attack, but in April of 2000, and anybody wants to see the copies of the report, we have it. Why, one of the hijackers that actually defected and walked into the office there in New Jersey of the FBI and said, I'm a hijacker. I was trained in Pakistan. Part of a secret group is here. We're going to hijack your planes and crash them and kill everybody on board if you don't give us what we want. And I don't really want to do that. And I started turning myself in. And boy, they did lie detector tests on him. They were convinced he was accurate. They reported him to Washington, D.C., and Washington, D.C.'s response was not, let's find out who the hijackers are, but get him out of the country. In fact, they sent two FBI agents to escort him back to London. They never once asked him where in Pakistan he'd been trained, who the other members of the secret group were. Now, intelligence, you know, if you're halfway intelligent, you're going to say, why wouldn't they try to find out who the other hijackers were? Why wouldn't they try to get information on where he'd been trained in Pakistan? Nobody ever asked him. Anybody who wants to check that out, we'll be glad to provide the documentation on it. But, Rodney, why don't you pick up your story, what you have learned about what's wrong with the official conspiracy theory?
Well, I think the biggest thing right now is all the buzz surrounding what happened with the controlled demolition at WTC number 7 and the fact that in the commission report it wasn't even mentioned.
I think that is really, very, very telling. You have to ask yourself why. Maybe because that's the one thing that they didn't want to talk about. In fact, I mean, that was one most serious mistake they made, I think. Would you agree?
Yes.
Okay. So why don't you give us your take on what happened there and why you don't believe the official story that the building, the 7, came down because, well, there was some debris that fell on top of it and there was a fire in the building and they couldn't control the fire, so they decided to pull the building.
Well, the thing that strikes me, of course, is that it fell straight down into its own footprint.
Right.
It did not topple over onto its side. If it had been damaged the way they said, the debris would have caused one side of it to collapse. It would have collapsed across the street into the field of wreckage that was already there.
All right, I think that's legitimate. Of course, the thing is that, but certainly it's an amazing thing. I talked to the fellow who was there the following day, and there wasn't a lot of debris. There was all the steel that was there, but something had happened to so much of the debris that you didn't expect to find it, you know, in a building that had just collapsed. And of course, it was seriously questioned about, I've heard that there was some molten metal there as well, but I don't know that for a fact. Have you heard the story there was melted metal in the basement of Building 7?
Yes, I have. There are some pictures that people can see also.
All right, where would they find that?
In the area, general area of number 7, number 1, and number 2. As far as where they can find the pictures, I think if people look towards Stephen Jones's website, they'll find links to photographs of that.
And, of course, what is that website? Do you recall offhand?
That's Scholars for 9/11 Truth and Justice.
Scholars for 9/11 Truth and Justice, or somebody go up on the internet and Google it, Stephen Jones, or Dr. Stephen Jones, and his information is so vitally important. Well, our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. If you'd like to talk to Gabriel or Rodney about this, and to me, of course, the one thing that finally convinced me was, of course, watching Building 7 come down and a few dozen times. And there's no question it's a controlled demolition. What do you think about the remarks of Larry Silverstein, which have been reproduced in so many of our various DVDs and videos of the discussing 9/11?
Quite an admission.
Would you like to tell our listeners what Mr. Silverstein said?
Well, to paraphrase, he just said there's been such a loss of life that maybe the best thing to do was just pull it, and pull it is commonly referred to in the demolition trade as the command to pull to set off the controlled demolition. And so he basically, in this PBS documentary, it conflicted with all the official story that somehow Osama bin Laden and his 19 Arab hijackers had done all this damage.
In fact, you have to have an awful lot of faith in the government to believe their story that Building 7 came down the way it did, just by coincidence. It was actually a block away. There was another building in between Building 7 and the Twin Towers. And certainly no other building has ever caught fire and done that. In fact, all of the other buildings, Building 3, 4, 5, and 6, they all collapsed in the very, very center. And if anybody's seen some of the pictures of those buildings, no other steel building in all history has ever collapsed like those buildings did, or certainly like Building 7 did, from a fire alone. I mean, this looks just like exactly the controlled demolitions we see in Las Vegas when they take those buildings down. Did you have that impression?
Yes, it looks, just goes straight down in the footprint. And also, if you watch the video of it, it crimps at the very top penthouse, starts to collapse first. So that's another, if the small fires that were down below were really the cause, why would it collapse up top first?
I think that was, Chris, that's what you do with a controlled demolition, and the point we tried to make earlier. Well, Rodney, do you think that the American people are beginning to wake up at all to what's going on? Do you think that they really care about that? Do you think they're more interested in, the current war, the current problems at Virginia Tech, or perhaps what's happening to the stock market, or who's going to win the NBA championship? Do you think they're really concerned about what happened on 9/11 and the implications for America?
I don't think it's so remote in the past now that they don't care. I think the American people would be stimulated to care if they had some way of finding out, what actually happened.
But, of course, you have to keep their attention constantly focused on it. And if the media isn't always talking about it or bringing out the truth, or, as we've seen recently, people have talked about what happened there, and then immediately they get attacked and vilified by, people. For instance, poor old Rosie O'Donnell. And
yes.
Rosie's not one of my favorite people, but I heard what she'd said on her program, and I said that what she's saying is absolutely right. I don't care whether she's got a pointed head or what she has. I mean, she gave an excellent explanation, of what was going on, and she was attacked by the people on her panel, and she I remember so well. She looked at these women who were attacking her, and she said, "Tell me, do you have as much confidence in George Bush today as you had when he was first elected?" And, of course, they just sat there dumbfounded. And then at that point that she began to talk about, Building 7 and the other things that had happened. And I said, Rosie, I love you. You're doing a great job. But then, of course, she's attacked as Tokyo Rosie, and she's vilified and demonized by all the media for daring to question the official government conspiracy theory. And this seems to happen to anybody who tries to bring the truth out. Have you run into that?
Yes, it happened with Charlie Sheen directly after when he was on the Alex Jones show.
And, of course, many times these people actually will lose their careers for telling the truth. Charlie Sheen's too young to remember what happened to Dick Gregory after the assassination of President Kennedy, when Dick Gregory, who was a very, very certainly skilled comedian, well-known, great reputation, came out and questioned the results of the Warren Committee report. And he hardly ever worked after that. Had a few jobs, but his career as a comedian was destroyed because he, I think, had very legitimate reasons to question the Warren Commission report. I think Charlie Sheen and Rosie have opened themselves up to terrible reprisals from both the right and the left for telling the truth. Because both the right and the left, of course, are following the official party line. It's only people like you and myself, maybe two ends of the political spectrum. But we're trying to get people to think and realize the implications of what happened in 9/11 and where it has led us to where we are today and where it is going to lead us now if the American people don't wake up and realize what really happened. So, Rodney, how are we going to wake the American people up?
Well, one of the things we are starting up on right now in New York City is we'd like to get an initiative put on the ballot in the next election where the people could demand a real investigation be begun with commissioners that don't have a conflict of interest. And we're going to be starting to collect signatures for that very soon.
Well, that's really a very interesting concept because we know that Jimmy Walter was a multimillionaire and put almost $6 million or $8 million of his own money into running full-page ads in the New York Times and running ads on television. And basically, over half the people in New York City didn't believe the government's conspiracy theory. They knew what had happened. They knew they'd been lied to by Giuliani and the others. And so New York might be the best place. And, of course, if you could ever hear, you would have jurisdiction.
Right.
But my fear is that, of course, it'll be controlled by the local officials. And the local officials would not dare to let this information get out. Think of the implications. If people realize that they had killed 3,000 Americans, you know, that they had no concern over human life. And, of course, the question I always like to ask is, what happened to the 1,100 bodies? 1,100 bodies disappeared. Were they crushed when the building collapsed? Were they vaporized when the building exploded? We'll be back in just a moment here at Radio Liberty. Well, Sidney Rodney, you know, what sort of response are you getting? Have you actually started collecting signatures back there?
No, we're just working out the terms of the petition right now.
I would be
very close to going out there on the street.
I would be very, very careful, you know, how this thing is drawn up so that they...
Oh, yeah.
And you have to understand, now, how long have you been involved in trying to get something done effectively, you know, from this political point of view?
For me, it's been 2.5 years.
All right. Let me tell you the first lesson you have to learn, and that is your movement's infiltrated. I don't know who's infiltrated it, but they have it. People there who are pretending to be the most dedicated, you know, people who really want to get the truth out, and they're willing to put all their time and their money in. And but you want to be very, very careful because they may very well be agents of the CIA and the FBI, and they've infiltrated the conservative movement. And many of my friends' ministries have been destroyed by government infiltrators who were there, not simply to spy, but to destroy ministries and destroy efforts. And they do this on both the right and the left. They've done it for many years. So be very, very careful. Are you working with a group back in New York?
Yes, New York 9/11 Truth.
All right. Do you live back there?
Yes.
All right, fine. Well, just heed my advice. Remember, I've been at this for 45 years. I've survived. I've been very, very fortunate. Many of my friends have not. Some of them have died, and some of them have had their families and everything else destroyed, and as many of them have given up. But you stick in there, but just be suspicious of everybody.
Yes.
And smile through clenched teeth. You have to learn how to do that. But I think it's a great idea. And I think that you just want to be very, very sure that the petition you draw up will be legal, that it will have accomplished what you want to, and that the local district attorney or the local officials will not be able to take it and then neutralize it, as they did with the investigation of the Oklahoma City bombing, when, of course, the local attorneys, district attorney, you know, when they were forced eventually to investigate, of course, held a kangaroo court designed not to reveal but to conceal what really happened with the Oklahoma City bombing and Timothy McVeigh and Larry Nichols. And only now are we really beginning to find out that Timothy McVeigh was actually, at least according to Terry Nichols, according to Paul Hammer, who had the cell next to Terry Nichols, and according to Terry's sister, Jennifer, that Timothy McVeigh was working for a special secret special forces team involved in illegal activity and was simply carrying out orders. He was the patsy, and the only way he could get out of jail was to let them kill him. Well, it's, just be careful that you don't get into that sort of a situation. How would you actually structure an investigation if you were able to get your petition through, Gabriel? Pardon me, Rodney?
Well, we would approach certain people to be actually hired as commissioners, and they would be paid to do this job.
No, no. Do you know who these people are? Would they be impartial? That's all you want is impartial people.
Yes, of course. I mean, some of the people we would want on there would be some of the very well-known names, you know, that are in the truth movement already because of the research they've done, like Dr. Jones that I mentioned before, for example.
Right, a good man. A very courageous man, incidentally. And probably David Lee Griffith, would that be one of them?
Yes.
All right, and of course these people could be there, but they have to have subpoena power. They've got to be able to get the truth. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and our guests this evening, Gabriel Day and Rodney Lewis. And if you're out there and you have a question or comment, our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. And Rodney is working with a group back in New York, and they're planning on getting a petition, and they're going to want to get together a committee that would actually be funded. Would it be funded by the government? How would it work?
I think so, yes.
All right, fine. But then who would be using the power of law? Certainly it was anybody appointed by the government, by the governor, by the mayor of New York, Bloomberg, and certainly the governor of New York, Spitzer. I mean, they wouldn't dare let the truth come out, and they'd certainly feel the wrath of the establishment come down on them. So certainly they're not going to appoint people who would want to get to the bottom of this, and you'd end up with another Philip Zelikow or something running. And for our listeners, Philip Zelikow was the executive director of the 911 Commission. And, of course, he was simply there not to reveal but to conceal what happened, and he sure did a great job of it. 1,100 testimonies, secret testimonies, given before the commission were sealed for 50 years so that Osama bin Laden would never learn what happened on 9-1-1. At least that was the explanation. That's why they were made classified and sealed for 50 years. And if there's nothing to conceal, why did they conceal the testimony of 1,100 people who appeared in private sessions before the 9-1-1 commission? So how are you going to get somebody to head this commission who will do an honest job? Because he's going to have the power to subpoena. He's going to have the power to, you know, to bring the people forward and question them.
That's right.
And certainly, you know, Stephen Jones is a brilliant physicist, but, you know, I don't know how he would act in the position of a prosecutor. You almost need somebody with some legal training. Do you have anybody in mind that you would really trust? I mean, I don't know very many lawyers I would trust with that. I'm sure there must be honest ones out there, but I hope you have somebody to, you would make this suggestion, because they're going to have the
power. Yeah, we do have an attorney working with us now.
You do? All right. And do you know anything about him? Are you sure he's not a plant?
Oh, yes. As a matter of fact, he's been working with us for at least 2 years now.
All right, fine. Well, I hope your appraisal is right. I know an awful lot of attorneys who are working in this field are there simply to sabotage it. I know a number of people who tried to bring lawsuits, and the attorney comes and says, I'm here to help you. I just love what you're doing. I work with pro bono, you know, just to let me direct you. And of course, that ends up completely destroying the movement. So I hope you got a good attorney. And of course, he's a good attorney. Then he would certainly you could trust him with the authority to subpoena people, and of course to have public hearings, because that's what we really need. No more of this testifying in secret.
That's right.
So, how many signatures would you need actually to get this on the
ballot? We're going to need to collect 50,000 signatures.
That's all you need, really?
Mm-hmm.
Well, that would be quite doable, because I think the majority of people in New York, many of them, of course, you know, is suffering from the chronic lung disease they got because the EPA lied to them, and Mayor Giuliani lied to them, and Christine Todd Whitman lied to them and told them they had nothing to worry about. Just go right back there. The air just is nothing to worry about. And literally thousands of people are pulmonary cripples because of that. And I think a lot of people in New York are pretty angry about that. Have you run into that at all? Have you?
When I visited New York, I've heard testimony from some of the first responders. And they are quite angry.
Well, I think with good justification, because some of their lives have been ruined. They've lost their pulmonary. The response of men who were previously, top-notch athletes and triathlon people, and now they can just barely walk upstairs. And many of them have been forced to give up their jobs, and then there's no compensation for many of them, and these were the heroic people there who were working on the pile. And so I would think that they or their relatives, I don't think you'd have any trouble at all getting 50,000 signatures. Are you going to do paid signatures, or are you just going to send people out with petitions? What are your thoughts?
Well, we're going to have a lot of volunteers to send them out.
All right. Try to save your money if you can get the volunteers. That's obviously the best way to go. Well, if you're out there in the listening audience and you have a question or a comment on what happened on 911, 911 was a watershed event. America will never be the same after that. And we'll either learn what happened that day, or I believe that we're going to lose America. So I applaud Gabriel and Rodney, our two guests this evening, for their effort, their willingness to put in their time and effort and money into this effort to try to save America. We'll be back in just a moment here at Radio Liberty. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, and coming to us from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story. Our guest this evening, Gabriel Day, and he's with the local 911 group here, and then, of course, with Rodney Lewis. And now, what is this website, 911sharethetruth.com? Whose website is that?
Dr. Stan, that's mine, and I started just as my contribution to the movement when I first got involved, and because I'd had some previous experience doing national distribution with education and fundraising material for grassroots groups working on other causes, I just started working on developing resources for the 9/11 Truth Movement. So there people will find DVDs, books, buttons, stickers, posters, and also lots of informative links.
Well, we've got so many wonderful DVDs out now. In fact, we carry about five of them. Right? What's your favorite DVD on the 911? Which one do you like the most?
I think the 9/11 Mysteries is probably the best introduction for average people. If you wanted a little more scientific, you could get one of the ones with Stephen Jones or Kevin Ryan, the UL Laboratories ex-employee. The ones with David Ray Griffin are all good, like 9/11 the American Empire or 9/11 Missing Reality. And then Press for Truth is a great intro. It's probably the softest intro. It just tells the story of the Jersey Widows who continuously push for an investigation and still pushing for the truth.
And actually, I really like the 911 Press for the Truth myself. Not that the others aren't all excellent, but we offer, I think, at least five of them. I've probably seen 20 of the DVDs, but 911 Press for the Truth has got a lot of human interest in it, a lot of compassion. I mean, meeting these four widows who lost their husbands and they're all very articulate, and I think, of course, the fellow who put this together has some great footage on it you're not going to see elsewhere, so I really commend them. Well, I saw one the other day, a 20-minute talk, where they had actually the testimony of Norman Mineta, where he tells what happened that morning, and if every American could see that 20-minute video that's up there, why I think that, and we'll talk about that when we get back here in just a minute at Radio Liberty, because... Well, this is Dr. Stan. Have you seen that testimony of Norman Mineta, where he's actually testifying before the 911 Commission?
Yes, it's remarkable, you know. He talks about how Cheney whipped his head around and said, yes, the order still stands.
Well, I think people have to understand the sequence of this. Basically, everything that was put forward in the 911 commission was carefully orchestrated to conceal the truth about what happened. And they talked to the people ahead of time, and then, of course, they told them and asked them the same questions when they were going to testify in public. Because the last thing you wanted was for the public to learn the truth. So they bring in Norman Mineta, and Norman Mineta, I don't think he's a conspirator at all. I think he's just a guy, a politician, and he's asked what happened that morning, and he tells how, he goes to the White House, and they take him down to this sub-basement there, and this is, before the plane has hit the Pentagon, and there's Dick Cheney. He's obviously in charge of everything. President's off, and I don't know whether he's still talking to the goat or talking about the goats or whether he's in Air Force One or running away, scared to death at the implications of what's happened, but off hiding someplace. But Cheney's there, and he's in charge. And they're sitting there, and some young man comes in. He's described as a young officer, and he says the plane is 50 miles out. And then he comes back a couple of minutes later, and he says the plane is 30 miles out. And then he comes in a couple of minutes later, and he says, the plane is 10 miles out to the orders still stand. Now, here's Norman Mineta telling this story. I've read it in the testimony, but I've never actually seen the testimony, and they got the footage. And Norman Mineta says, and then Dick Cheney whipped his neck around and said, of course the orders still stand. Have you heard anything to the contrary? And a few minutes later, the plane hits the Pentagon. Well, what were the orders? Nobody wants to ask that question. Obviously, they could have stopped the plane. The orders were not to stop the plane. As you read this, it's obvious they wanted the plane to hit the Pentagon, or whatever hit the Pentagon. I don't know what happened. That story was never picked up by the media, but it is available. Of course, you can read it in Norman Mineta's testimony. It's available on the Internet. Do you know the name of this new video that has it? I saw it on YouTube. Somebody sent it to me, but I think earlier this week.
9/11, the birth of treason.
What was it?
9/11, the birth of treason.
I may very well be. Well, if you're out there and you want to get it, try that URL. Is that on YouTube or Google?
It's probably on both, but they could try YouTube and just put that in, 9/11, birth of treason.
All right, fine. Well, ladies and gentlemen, this is, I think, one of the most important parts of the whole story. And, of course, never once mentioned by the 911 Commission. I mean, they published it because they had no alternative, but, of course, the 911 Commission report didn't mention it. The book Without Precedent by Lee Hamilton and Tom Keene didn't mention it. They covered up everything they possibly could. They cannot let the American people know the truth because they believe the American people couldn't accept the truth, and they're frightened that people may learn the truth. Well, Rodney, what are your thoughts? Is there anything you can do besides get this petition signed?
Well, I think one of the things we try to do is anytime there's live TV coverage to try and get some signs in front of the camera or some chants going or anything they can't shut down, whether it's relevant to what's going on or not.
Well, what's happening back in New York City, Sydney? They're able to isolate us in various areas. The things, for instance, most Americans never heard of Jimmy Walters or his drive to get the information before the people of New York and spending $6 million, running those full-page ads and television, advertisements. Did you see those when you were there?
Yes, I did.
But nobody else ever heard about them. We didn't hear about it on the West Coast. Most people didn't hear about it, or guess Jimmy Walters. The fact that Jimmy Walters was threatened, his life was threatened, and he was forced to leave the country and is living and hiding in Europe. And this is what has happened to so many people who've tried to get the truth out. Their life has been threatened, and I know several of them have been forced to leave America. So is there any, other than your group, is there anything really going on there to get the people riled up and to keep their attention focused on this betrayal, this murderous action?
We have Sunday night programs at a fairly large church in eastern Greenwich Village called St. Mark's on the Bowery.
All right, how
about it? About 300 people, so that's generally pack that place every Sunday.
That's really pretty good. And, of course, is anybody else getting any ads out or flyers out or certainly television programs out? Are you getting any fair shake at all from any of the media there?
In the media, not really, no.
All right. Well, of course, that's the thing. You know, they control the media, at least the major networks, but we still have alternative radio. What about Alex Jones' program? Is that having an impact back there in New York? Are there any outlets for it in New York?
Yes.
Yes, what?
The station WBAI has been supportive, too, and put on broad programming related to 9/11, correct?
No. What station is that? Is that in New York?
Funny, that's WBAI?
Yes, that's correct.
Yeah.
Is it a major station there
in
New York?
Yeah, that's a major... it has...
Pacifica station.
Yeah.
One of the five Pacifica stations, like KPFA.
Okay, fine. So they have a fairly good listening audience then.
Oh, yeah.
All right, fine. Well, you know, the Pacifica is certainly on this issue. I applaud their effort to get the truth out. Well, let's go to Mike, who's calling in here from Santa Cruz. Hi, Mike. Did you have a question or comment?
Yeah, just a quick question, if I could. I'm really curious to hear more about this 911 Truth movement. Is it like a nationwide thing? And are there chapters, local chapters, and websites and things like that? And I'd like to just take my answer off the air.
All right, fine. Well, if people are out there in the listening audience, how can they get in touch with your organization and get effective? Do you want to give more details on that?
Dr. Stan, locally here?
Yeah, locally, yeah, and then nationwide.
Okay, well, let's start locally here. I work within the Santa Cruz 9/11 Truth Network. We've been going about over two years now. We usually have our meetings on Tuesday nights, and you can email me to get the contact information. I'm at sharethetruth911@yahoo.com.
And I'll give that one time very slowly.
sharethetruth911@yahoo.com.
Give it up one more time.
sharethetruth911@yahoo.com.
Share the truth.
Right. sharethetruth911@yahoo.com.
All right, fine.
Yeah.
sharethetruth911@yahoo.com. If you'd like to get hold of Gabriel, or I get this attached to the local committee, which is really trying to do something, and you're holding regular meetings here?
Regular meetings, and we've had many public programs showing videos, having guest speakers come in at the Vets Hall. And nationally, a great place to start is just 911truth.org. If you go there and you click on the grassroots contacts, you'll see contacts in really all 50 states. And a great website to keep up on just the breaking news in the movement is 911blogger.com.
All right.
Also, if people like to join us locally, there's National Days of Truth Action occur on the 11th of every month now, and they can find information about that at truthaction.org. And this most recent April 11th, we were at the town clock in Santa Cruz with our placards and signs, and we'll be out there again on May 11th, and we're also gearing up for the first time that it falls on a Saturday will be August 11th.
Now, what about the university? Are you getting any support out of the university students?
We've got members of our group that are working on that. We also, members of our group, have already met with the staff of Representative Sam Farr. We gave him books and DVDs for their staff to read and to digest, and we're an ongoing dialogue with them to try to bring this issue forward to Sam Farr.
Well, what do you think? Do you think Sam Farr believes this? Do you think Sam Farr may know it's the truth and not be telling it? Or do you think that, is it possible that he really believes the official government conspiracy theory?
I can only, from the comments of his staff, I can only assume that right now he believes the official story. But we're hopeful with the information that we provided that we'll get through them.
All right, fine. So is the But he certainly seems to oppose the war, but he supports the official conspiracy theory. All right, fine. Well, our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. Let's go to Ray calling from Santa Cruz. Hi, Ray. How you doing?
I'm doing pretty good. What I wanted to ask was, is there any particular place on the net where I could get a timeline on the events, you know, surrounding 9/11? Is there any particular place on the internet that would be best?
Sure. If you go to cooperativeresearch.org, that's the Paul Thompson site.
He's
the author of Terror Timeline.
Cooperative. Do you spell it?
Cooperative Research. Cooperativeresearch.org.
Research.org.
Or if you just Google the complete 9/11 timeline, you'll find it also.
Okay. Could I just Google it up, or do I have to? I have to go on the web, I guess.
Well, if you just put in the Google search "complete 9/11 timeline," I bet you'll come up with cooperativeresearch.org.
Yeah.
In fact, I think Ray, we actually carry Terror Timeline. We think it's an excellent book.
Mm-hmm.
Paul Thompson did an excellent job on that. It's called Terror Timeline, and it just gives you a day by day, minute by minute, a background of what's going on. It's called The Terror Timeline by Paul Thompson.
Terror Timeline.
And Sydney, call it. It's a 1-800-544-8927 to order it.
Okay.
And it's very well done.
Okay, that was it.
Okay, yeah, thanks so much.
Okay, bye.
Okay, fine. Well, let's see who we have a couple of other callers on the line. Again, our number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or 464-8295. And let's go to Jason, who's calling from Maryland. It's awful late back there in Maryland, isn't it, Jason?
It is, Dr. Stan. Thank you for taking my call. I can't go to sleep when you're on.
Okay, fine.
I was wondering, with you believing in our precious Messiah the way that you do, what you think about the paganism that has been brought into Christianity in the form of December 25th, which is the birthday of Tammuz, the son of Nimrod and Semiramis, and the celebration of Easter, which is named after Ishtar, and the 40 days of Lent, which are the 40 days of weeping for Tammuz, culminated with eating a pig because he was gored to death by a pig, and the myriad, the many other things that have crept into our religion.
I think you're absolutely right. I think, of course, this, so much of this was pagan in origin, brought into Christianity, and of course, certainly I see. I think people have to understand that Easter was a pagan holiday, and of course we use it to commemorate the Lord. But you have to understand that so many of our Christian holidays and even our beliefs, of course, have been influenced by the pagan beliefs of yesteryear, and we have to be so careful that we're not taken in by them.
I think that one of the most dangerous things is when Constantine issued the, I guess it wasn't a papal bull at that time, but the edict that nobody could worship or rest according to the Hebrew or the Jewish Sabbath, and that everyone had to worship on the venerable day of the sun, which was, Constantine was a sun worshiper to the day of his death. After his conversion, he, of course, murdered his mother and his son, and Sol Invictus was stamped on all of his coins. He was a sun worshiper to the day he died, and we worship on Sunday because he said so.
All right, well, thank you so much for calling, Jason. Let's go to Jack, who's calling from Michigan. Go ahead, Jack.
That was Jason who was bringing up Constantine?
Yeah.
Oh, that was interesting, because remember Craig Wynn, Prophet of Doom, mentioning that the King James Bible had something like several hundred, if not 1,000, alterations done to it. My question for the guests is whether they know of the fellows who have HawksCafe.com, a Vietnam fighter pilot, airline pilot who resigned in December and has a lawsuit against Boeing because of their use of military gyrochips
Well, that's a little off the subject of 911. What were the military gyrochips used for?
Oh, that was their contention is that the 911 jets were commandeered by remote control.
All right, fine. Well, of course, we don't actually know, but certainly some people think that. Certainly there was a program about 6 months before 911. And of course, the characters that were in the X Files, what were the Three Horsemen? I've forgotten, or whatever they were in this simulated situation where a plane had been commandeered and was heading towards the World Trade Center, and just at the last minute, these three computer nerds were able to actually take the plane back, and it soars over the top of the. Twin Towers, and it was never shown again. And boy, they got rid of that program in a hurry. So, Sydney, do you know anything at all about the possibility that there was a computer controls, or the planes were under computer control? And have any thoughts on that, Rodney or Gabriel?
Well, we know technologically has been available for them to do that for well over a decade, I think.
The thing is that the technology is there. They can take a plane off in San Francisco and have it land in Manila or Shanghai with nobody to control. So this can be done. We do not know what was done that morning. That's the truth. The problem, Jack, is you've got to be careful what you conjecture. You stick to what you know.
Well, no, that's what I'm saying, Dr. Stan. These guys are bringing... He's joined by a British forensic investigator. They've got a lawsuit against Boeing. Not only for the gyrochips, but for the use of some fuselage insulation material that had a middle layer of the three layer that was incendiary C4.
Well, the thing is, is this true, or is this to get us off the track?
No, they got evidence.
All right, fine. Well, then let's hope it gets brought out in court, but I'm sure not going to repeat it until we have it for sure.
Yeah.
Okay. Hey, thanks so much for calling.
Thank you.
All right, fine. Well, we've just got a couple of minutes more. Our guest has been Gabriel Day and Rodney Lewis. The website here, Gabriel, is www.911sharethetruth.com, all one word, 911sharethetruth.com. And we'll be back here in just a moment to wrap up this evening's program here at Radio Liberty. Well, Gabriel and Rodney, you have 3 minutes to wrap up the program. Who's going to do it?
Go for it, Rodney. You want to, since you're the guest from New York.
What's that?
You're going to have to talk for 3 minutes to wrap up the program. You have been selected by unanimous consent.
Oh, okay.
Go ahead.
How can we, what can the American people do to break out this truth?
What the American people... they have to get better informed.
All right, they got to
get
better informed.
Because of their sources that they have, it's difficult for them.
All right, fine. Well, I suggest that people start with 911 Press for the Truth. If you want to know more about that, it's available at Radio Liberty. And do you carry that as well, Gabriel?
Absolutely.
All right, fine. So you can get it from Gabriel or go to radioliberty.com. And we carry, I think, five of the DVDs. We have The Day That Changed America Forever, 911 Mysteries, 911, we have Terror Storm, we have In Plain Sight. Which ones do you have, Gabriel?
Well, we have, I think we have like 21 total. Let me just go there real quickly. We also have Dust and Deceit, which is excellent about the environmental poisoning there, toxicity. We've also got Who Killed John O'Neill, which was, he was the FBI agent that left the FBI in frustration and not pursuing the hijacker, and then was killed on September 11th when he reported for duty on that day as Director of Security for the World Trade Center. We've also got the Behind Every Terrorist There's a Bush, which is actually got some comedy in it. And we've got all the Alex Jones one and the great Barry Zwicker one, The Great Conspiracy.
And I think, of course, Alex Jones' Terror Storm, he did an excellent job on that one. Did you enjoy that one, Gabriel?
Yes, very much. That's, and he's working on another one that I'm looking forward to seeing what should be coming out this year.
Well, we certainly carry several of Alex's DVDs out, and of course Secret Mystery of the Bohemian Grove, but that's a different subject, but it all ties in together, because of course the only way you can understand what happened on 9-1-1 is to recognize we're dealing with organized evil on a scale that is so overwhelming that most people repudiate it. They cannot believe anything could be that totally corrupt. Well, we're out of time. Gabriel and Rodney, thank you both for being with us as our guests here this evening at Radio Liberty, and I look forward to having you back again in the not-too-distant future. Good night. God bless. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and of course this is the time when I do need to remind our listeners out across America that Radio Liberty is primarily listener-supported, and of course we do hope that many of you will give serious consideration to joining the Radio Liberty family of supporters. And if you'd like to join us, why, of course, give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. And then, of course, we do hope that many of you out there will also, of course, want to get the material that's available on our website at radioliberty.com, where you can listen to our programs regularly. And let me suggest you pull down our newsletters and read them. And we have a great many newsletters that deal with what happened on 9-1-1. But one of the most important books we carry is called See No Evil. And there in the preface, written by Robert Baer, who was 25 years working for the CIA, and of course his last assignment was Iraq. And I mean, it's fascinating to realize what really went on in Iraq during the 1990s. But in the foreword to his book, he simply quotes one of the highest-ranking CIA officials, who was quoted as telling one of his friends off the record, "When the dust finally clears, the American people will realize that 9-1-1 was not a failure of intelligence. It was a triumph. When the dust finally clears, the American people will realize 9-1-1 was not a failure of intelligence. It was a triumph." How could the death of 3,000 Americans be a triumph? Why, very, very simply, it was going to lead us into a war with Afghanistan, a war with Iraq, and fearfully, or I hope I'm wrong, but a war with Iran, and then a war with the whole of the Muslim world, that will eventually, of course, result in the class of civilizations that is described by Samuel Huntington. Hope and pray that I'm wrong, because this would be a disaster for our country, a disaster for the world, and we need as much time as we can to reach the American people and try to get them to understand what's going on. And, of course, I fear that the class of civilizations, a war with the Muslim world, will end up with the destruction of America, which may very well explain why America is not mentioned in Scripture. So if it is, it's mentioned in a very frightening way. And there's a passage in Ezekiel 38 that talks about the land of the islands to the west, of course, and what will happen to those islands when the fire comes down from the sky. Well, of course, please, of course, help us get the information out. It's your job to reach others and suggest they listen to Radio Liberty. They can hear us 5 hours a day on various networks. But, of course, all of the, at least 3 hours a day are archived. They can hear them live. They can hear them archived. They can hear them on MP3. They can go to Global Star. That's Global Star, www.globalstar, and then hook on to 4. And they can listen to the live feed to our satellite, and they can hear our programs 9 hours a day there. And, of course, their repeats there. But at least it's there, and then of course you can listen to Joyce Riley and Chris Meyer and Pastor Butch Pop. So we do have a 24-hour conservative Christian programming in answer to Howard Stern. We think it's a great opportunity to get other people listening, and far better listening to our program than to most of the things that are up there. And we try to keep things right on the cutting edge, and if I don't, why, Joyce has some wonderful programmings, as do both Pastor Butch and, of course, Pastor Chris Meyer. So remember that Globalstar, and number four, and you can hear our programs 24 hours a day, our feed to our satellite. And then, of course, we certainly hope many of you will give serious consideration to getting my latest DVD, Forgotten Secret, or I should say Forbidden Secret. That's a forbidden secret because it will really help you to understand the true nature of the battle we're involved in today. And then we ask you, of course, to pray for America, to pray for revival, to pray for our leaders and our ministers, but please pray for Radio Liberty. We're on the front lines of this truly spiritual battle for the survival of Western civilization and the souls of men.